Who pays what in taxes? It's a question that came into sharp focus after Mitt Romney revealed he paid less than 14% on over $40 million in income over 2 years, pretty close to billionaire Warren Buffett's rate, which he's said was about 17%, compared to staff members in his office who pay an average of 36%. Buffett called on Congress to do something, and this week Democrats in the Senate introduced a version of what's being called the Buffett Rule, which would require people making more than $1 million a year to pay a minimum effective tax rate of 30%. But then groups like the Tax Foundation say Romney's rate, 14%, is actually higher than the rate of 97% of all taxpayers. Parsing who pays what in taxes can be as mysterious as the tax forms themselves because, as our next guest says, there's some cherry-picking going on. Let's bring in David K. Johnston for a primer. He won a Pulitzer Prize for reporting on taxes. He's also a columnist for Reuters and distinguished professor of tax law at Syracuse University. He joins us from the studios of WXXI in Rochester, New York. David, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me, Robin.
And first, we know that there are apples and oranges here. Mitt Romney and Warren Buffett don't pay taxes on wages. They pay taxes on money made from investments. We're going to talk about that. But address this claim that most Americans also pay less than 14%. Newt Gingrich says he paid 31%. The tax brackets are, you know, for 25% and 28%. So address that first.
Well, what's going on is all these different parties are mixing and matching as suits their political interests. It is true for 1 year that almost half of Americans paid no federal income taxes because President Obama, as part of the stimulus package, put in tax provisions. And the Republicans wanted, of course, tax provisions. And we removed from the tax rolls a lot of people. We will soon be back to 35, 36, 38% of Americans who pay no income taxes. And who are those people? They're people who are legally defined as poor, and they are families with children who make less than about $40,000 a year. And why don't they pay taxes? Well, primarily because the Republicans added the $1,000 per child tax credit.
So you're saying that there are people making around $40,000 in families who are using tax credits to reduce their taxes, but then also the very poor people. I think it's people who make less than $15,000 get a credit because they pretty much it's assumed they don't make enough to pay taxes.
They get something called the Earned Income Tax Credit if they work. And they have to make over $10,000 a year from their job in order to get it. This was an idea by Milton Friedman, the Nobel Prize-winning economist, and Ronald Reagan called it the best welfare program ever because you had to work to get it. It's a negative income tax, and it's a way to address people who don't make enough, and instead of paying them to do nothing, you give them this negative income tax because they do work.
Okay. So millions of Americans don't make enough to pay taxes. Others with families, they have tax credits, so they reduce their taxes. But what about people in the different brackets? I'm looking at 25% tax bracket, which is making up to $139,000, or 33%, which is up to $379,000. Do those people, you know, pay, if they're in a 28 or 33% bracket, do they pay less than 14%?
No. And here's where we have to broaden out a little bit, Robin. Mm-hmm. We have federal income taxes, which are progressive. The more you make, the more you should pay. We can talk about how that works pretty well until you get into the stratosphere. Mm-hmm. And then we have federal payroll taxes. That's to finance Social Security and Medicare. And so if you're a single person and you're making around $80,000 a year, you're paying in the neighborhood of 18-19% of your income in federal income taxes, then you're paying payroll taxes on top of that, half of which come out of your paycheck and you see, but another half, which are your wages, are paid directly by your employer. And that's how you end up with people like Warren Buffett's secretary having a tax rate, then you add state taxes, that brings them to more than 30%.
So it sounds like you're saying that people who say that Americans pay, the majority of Americans pay this low tax rate, are just picking out the income tax portion of the tax and not counting the other payroll taxes that you pay. But you make the point that federal taxes altogether are just about a fifth of the taxes that Americans pay overall. Talk more about the rest of the taxes, because you say that those are carried, you know, disproportionately by people who are not wealthy.
The federal income tax is less than half of all the federal taxes, the revenues that we collect. And it's important to put it in that perspective. The purpose of an income tax, when it was originally introduced all around the world, including the United States, was to tax what were called surplus incomes. And up until World War II, only high-income people paid the federal income tax. Now it's been turned into this money machine, and we tax people at quite low incomes. If you're a single person and you're making $10,000, you're paying federal income taxes unless you apply for the earned income tax credit. And as you go up in earnings, your tax rate goes up, but it stops growing at under $400,000. So if you make $400,000 and someone else makes $40 million, you pay the same tax rate.
So there's that, but you also remind us that Americans pay taxes that aren't federal income taxes. There are state and local taxes, property taxes, car taxes in some states, gas tax. Do you agree with others who say that these taxes fall more heavily on the poor and those who aren't wealthy?
Well, that's what the data show, and I'll give you in every state except one, I think it's Vermont, the bottom fifth of families pay a larger share of their income in state and local taxes than the top 1%. And in a number of states, it's double. The extreme example is Alabama, where the top 1% pay less than 5% of their income in state and local taxes, and the poorest families, who make about $1,000 a month or less, they pay on average 11% of their income to state and local government. So other than federal income taxes and the state income taxes in many states, they're all regressive, meaning lower income people bear a heavier burden than high income people.
In fact, you did a study of the highest income taxpayers. I think these are 400 top payers. Their federal tax burden has been slashed. The actual share of income paid in taxes is 16.6%. You compare that to the vast majority of Americans, their total share of income going to federal taxes increased from 13.1% in 1961 to 22.5% in 2007.
Yes, and here I think is something even more telling. If you look at the top 400 taxpayers from 1961, which we know because of a statistical fluke, and now, the tax rate paid by the top 400 has fallen by 60%. For the bottom 90%, it fell too, but when you add the increases in payroll taxes, they're paying the same or higher rate. We have, over the last 50 years, but mostly in the years since Ronald Reagan was elected, significantly reduced the tax burden on the highest income Americans. And remember, we've only been talking about people who are taxpayers. There are lots of wealthy people who pay very, very little in tax, and in many cases, no tax.
But David, you say the real tax rate on the wealthy has been going down over the last 20 years, in part because their income is money earned from investments like dividends and capital gains. So let's continue our primer. What are capital gains?
Capital gain is when you buy something, a stock, a house, an apartment building, and you sell it later for more than you paid for it. And that difference, your profit, is called a capital gain because you had a gain in the value of your capital.
And dividends is money made off investments. You keep the investment, but let's say a stock spins off some interest and that's your dividend?
Dividends represent earnings of your capital as you go along, just like interest from the bank.
Mm-hmm.
We used to pay very big dividends in America, 5, 6, 7% a year. Now we pay about 2. And that's one of the underlying problems we have today. But that's another show.
We'll stay with dividends. Dividends had been taxed at the same rate of wages. But we're reading a very colorful story about the history here. Eisenhower wanted to lower the rate on dividends in 1954. And then Speaker of the House John McCormick said that would be unjust to make a person with earned income, you know, wages, pay more in taxes than persons with unearned income from dividends, this money that spins off, let's say, stocks. But then you fast forward, President Bush reduced them in 2003 to 15%. Paul Krugman writes, this was on the coattails of what then looked like success in the war in Iraq. So it was only in 2003 that dividends dropped to this 15% that they're at now?
Yes, they had been at 20% for a while. But there's been a very profound change in America. Back in earlier times, earlier in the last century, conservatives and wealthy capitalists like Paul Mellon, when he was the Treasury Secretary, argued that capital should be more heavily taxed than labor. And now we've gotten to this argument that, oh, no, we shouldn't tax capital at all because that creates jobs. Well, it may create jobs. It doesn't necessarily do so. And I think it's a profoundly wrong argument, but it's a highly financed argument promoted by, guess what, people with lots of capital.
Well, and you and others have done studies showing that, in fact, and there may not be correlation, but in fact, jobs have increased when there were higher taxes on dividends and capital gains, and have not increased when there were lower taxes. But talk about capital gains. Again, this is when you sell something. We understand the only time in history they were taxed at the same rate as wages was in 1988, and this was under the tax reform law championed by Ronald Reagan. He then changed his mind about capital gains, and it was actually Clinton that lowered them to strike a deal for children's health care.
That's right. Under President Clinton, the capital gains rate was cut from 28% to 20, and Clinton got back into two things: an expansion of the earned income tax credit for low-income workers, and he got a better health care for children. To those at the very top who live off their capital, it was a real boon. And by the way, only about 10,000 Americans out of more than 300 million of us collect a third of the capital gains. It's the most highly concentrated form of income. Almost all of it goes to high-income Americans. By lowering this rate 8 percentage points, Clinton gave the very wealthy a tax cut 60% bigger than the one Bush put in place in 2003. Bush lowered it 5%. Percentage points. Clinton lowered it 8 percentage points.
So Bush lowered it further. And this was at the same time that he lowered dividends, again in 2003. And as we said, in the political atmosphere where he was seen as having a victory in the war in Iraq, and this passed through Congress. So David K. Johnston, that's sort of the history of how we got where we are with these low taxes on capital gains and dividends. What happens now? There's a move to, you know, raise taxes on, let's say, people making more than $1 million. We talked about this Buffett rule. What happens now?
Well, it depends on who we elect in the White House. If we were to elect Newt Gingrich, all capital would be untaxed. It would be tax-free. Capital gains and dividends would be tax-free. Romney would radically reduce taxes on capital. I think you have to look at what's the evidence of what this has produced. Over the last 10 years, we have seen the population growing at 5 times the rate of jobs. We've seen capital going offshore because with a push of a button, you can move unlimited amounts of money somewhere else. And corporations in America, non-bank corporations, are sitting right now on over $3 trillion, more than $10,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country, with no place to invest it. And that's because not that we have a shortage of capital, we have a shortage of good-paying jobs and enough wages in the jobs we do have.
You and others point out that while this debate as to whether or not lowering the taxes on capital gains and dividends has created jobs, as the backers say they would, there's definitely been less revenue.
Yes. In fact, if you adjust for inflation and population growth, the federal income tax now is bringing in a third less than it was in 2001, which was a recession year, and about 36% less than in the peak year of 2000. We are at the lowest level of taxes as a share of our economy since the end of the Truman administration. During the Reagan, Bush and Clinton years, the government was collecting between high 17, almost 18%, to a little over 20% of the economy. Now it's down to collecting less than 15. So if you want lower taxes, I'm sorry, Obama should be your hero. And I realize that's totally paradoxical, the idea that Obama should be your hero. But if you look at the numbers, it's under Obama that business has gotten huge tax breaks and favors of the kind that they didn't get from any of the previous four presidents who said they were going to cut your taxes and did, but nowhere near the way Obama has for big business.
That's David K. Johnston, columnist for Reuters, distinguished professor of tax law at Syracuse University. And I guess the other takeaway here, David, is if you've been looking around saying, wait a second, is everybody paying less than 14%? The answer is no.
Exactly right. And many people at the very top are paying a tiny fraction of 1% of their income in taxes.
David, thanks very much.
Thank you.